Dynamite tonight brought us three more matches in the Continental Classic. This is, of course, the month of December, which means that all of these shows are going to be basically populated by almost nothing but Continental Classic matches. They are going to dominate Dynamite and Collision for these next several weeks as we lead up to the finals of each league and then the championship final at World's End, but that's on December 27th. So tonight we had three more matches, including a main event, which I was actually looking forward to, and you will never, I was going to say rarely, but you will never hear me say that I am looking forward to really any segment involving the Death Riders because it is just so played out. But I was looking forward to this match tonight between Jon Moxley and Claudio Castagnoli because I was hopeful that coming out of this match, there might be enough time here at the end of the show to shoot some sort of angle that would hasten the, if not fall of the Death Riders, the fall of Jon Moxley in the Death Riders. Because you have to imagine that that is going to, you know, create some friction among the members when you have one guy losing and one guy winning. And what's the reaction going to be? Are people going to start choosing sides? Like, what's going to happen here? Maybe we'll actually get something interesting coming out of this. And what we got was, we they had a good match. Crowd was dead for it. Crowd did not give a shit about that match until the last 2 minutes. Got two heels in the ring. You got two heels in the ring that are part of the Death Riders. So, I mean, you can excuse the fans for not being terribly animated during that main event. But they went overtime. They went 10 minutes overtime on the show tonight. So when the match was over, we got nothing. There was no immediate aftermath to the match. What we did get was a very interesting comment from Bryan Danielson on commentary that would lead you to believe that, okay, something is coming, but they're going to drag it out a little bit longer. And this is one of those stories that you're only going to be able to hold my attention for a very limited window here because I'm not exactly invested in the Death Riders in any meaningful way. So whatever is going to happen here, I hope it happens very soon. Didn't happen tonight, but I hope it happens soon. And the comment from Danielson at least gave me hope that something is going to break sometime in these next few weeks as far as who should be leading this group. Now that Claudio has beaten Jon Moxley. Jon Moxley took yet another big loss here on this show, right? He's had a few big losses this year, including a Blood and Guts a few weeks ago. He took another one tonight. Is he fit to still lead the Death Riders? That should be the story coming out of this match. Unfortunately, we will have to wait a little while longer to find out the answer to that question. All of the Continental Classic matches of the three that we had tonight were at least good, if not very good. Actually, the best one involved Kyle Fletcher and Kevin Knight. And then we had a good one also with Okada and Pac. So another Death Rider takes a loss in the Continental Classic tonight as well. But the two things that I was really looking forward to on this show, which was the Moxley-Claudio thing and what would the fallout be, and the face-to-face involving Samoa Joe and Eddie Kingston, while they were both good, I still felt underwhelmed when they were over. And that was kind of the story of this show. We got some good wrestling on this show. You put Dynamite on any given week, you'll get good wrestling. You get that every week. Right? That's a given. You're going to get some good wrestling matches. The show overall just, I don't know, there was nothing to it. I mean, there was just no excitement. It was very dull. Show was over. I was like, it was a show. The show was not terribly interesting. Now, on top of that, we also had a tag team hardcore match, a holiday hardcore tag team match in the women's tag team title tournament, which is finally going to culminate at Winter Is Coming next week. That's when we're getting the world championship match between Samoa Joe and Eddie Kingston. Also next week, we are finally going to find out who the tag team champions are. It's going to be Toni Storm and Mina Shirakawa against Willow Nightingale and Harley Cameron. Tonight, though, we had a hardcore rules match with Toni and Mina taking on Megan Bain and Marina Shafir. I'm done with the hardcore stuff. I have hardcore fatigue on this show. Seriously. After the month that we just had, and all the blood and guts, I mean, you have blood and guts basically every week, but all the blood and guts stuff a few weeks ago, we had Full Gear, now this. this didn't need a stipulation. You know, you have a women's tag team championship tournament. That should sort of sell itself in a way. When they added this stupid stipulation, I just, you know, I groaned and I rolled my eyes. I said, why do we need to do this? Why do we need any stipulation in this tournament? I understand they wanted to find a reason to get those women on the pay-per-view a few weeks ago. But I just thought it was stupid adding any kind of stipulation. And then once we found out what it was, I wasn't shocked because, of course, they can't help themselves. Their thirst for blood consumes them. And so we had some stupid hardcore match tonight that I couldn't give two shits about. You have four women who were in there who were highly capable of going in there and having, again, what Dynamite is known for, having a really good wrestling match. And the stakes are already there because the winners go to the finals, right? So there's something tangible on the line all by itself. You don't need anything else. But now we have to have the silly weapons and the plunder and the blood and the tax and all kinds of bullshit. And it just ruined the fucking match for me. And then we had an announcement on this show. The annual Dynamite Diamond Dozen Battle Royal is coming up. That's going to be taking place on Wednesday, December 17th, as part of a three-hour holiday bash combo show. Oh, here we go again. Yes. It's going to be Dynamite and Collision. They're being lumped together. And so on that show, we're going to have this Battle Royal. That's going to be taking place in Manchester, England. And the two remaining men in the ring will advance to the Dynamite Diamond Ring Finals, which will be taking place as part of the Christmas Eve Dynamite on 34th Street, which will have a special start time of 6 p.m. Eastern. And so on that show, the winner of that match, whoever wins the Diamond Ring, will earn the right to challenge for the AEW World Championship on the January 14th episode of Dynamite from Phoenix, Arizona. That is the Maximum Carnage episode of Dynamite. So just so we're clear on this, they have an entire month. We're in the middle of an entire month right now. We just kicked off an entire month of this grueling. I mean, it's not G1 grueling, but this grueling Continental Classic tournament. We're going to have this round robin style, right? All these matches that are building to World's End. Who's going to the finals? And they're all fighting for the right to become the Continental Champion. As if that really means anything. But here we just have a battle royal, and then the last two men in the battle royal are going to have a match, and the winner of that match gets a world championship opportunity on Dynamite on January 14th. Kind of makes you wonder, why, if they had their priorities straight, why don't we have a world championship opportunity like that up for grabs in the Continental Classic? Even if you want to give them a ring or a trophy or some kind of award, yeah, for being the Continental winner this year, it should always come back around to your world championship. That's your crown jewel of the promotion. Of course, it's less so in AEW because there's so fucking many of them. But I mean, I've been saying that since day one. Why is there not a world championship opportunity on the line here? You look at some of the names that are in this tournament, right? So you got some big names in there. And you're doing this, you know, format where everybody wrestles each other. All these matches are going on. It builds to a big pay-per-view final. I don't understand why there isn't a world championship opportunity up for grabs in this tournament, but evidently, all you got to do is win this battle royal and then win a singles match. And you could very well be challenging for the AEW world title. So that's the way it is. It also makes me wonder, are we not, for the first time, we may actually have someone other than MJF holding this diamond ring for the last 5 or 6 years. Every single year, MJF has been the sole holder of that diamond ring. To me, it would make no sense to just rush him back now, you know, to insert him into this battle royal so that he could once again, you know, win the right to hold the diamond ring and maintain his gimmick. That doesn't make any sense. He's been gone for months. He already has a contract that he could cash in for a world championship match. What the fuck does he need the ring for? He's got the contract. All he's got to do is give at least 1 week's notice, and he's golden. He gets his match. So it looks to me like we're finally going to get someone different holding the diamond ring, and that person will get a world championship match next month. So that was That was the big announcement that they made here on the show. But there's no need to rush MJF back. I mean, if clearly he's not going to be the one challenging for the world title, I wouldn't think, at World's End, which I thought he would be, then just keep him out. Bring him back at the appropriate time. Now doesn't feel like the appropriate time. So it looks like we're actually going to have a new ring holder. Find out who that is. This is your AEW Dynamite review, Wednesday Night Dynamite. It is December 3rd, 2025. I am the Sala Monster. Like and subscribe. Super chats are open. We are inching closer, by the way, to 90,000 subscribers here on the channel, which is a pretty good number. So as we inch our way forward, if you are not already subscribed, please go ahead and do so. If you know somebody who's a wrestling fan who you think might enjoy the content, go ahead and share and spread the word, and we'll get to 90K soon enough, early in 2026. So I thank you all for helping me get there. And again, we'll be reading your super chats later on here in the stream, so you can get those on in. So let's start from the top here. Tony Schiavone was in the ring to open the show and to introduce the AEW World Champion Samoa Joe. And then he introduced Eddie Kingston, the challenger, next week. They were coming out for a face-to-face ahead of Winter Is Coming. Everyone else barred from ringside. You say everyone else, I mean, basically the ops, barred from ringside. So Joe tells Schiavone to exit the ring before he snatches that wig off his head. And Joe said that Eddie is probably wondering why he's not out here, why Joe is not out here wearing a three-piece suit, looking like $1 million. Said it's simple. When he got on his jet this morning and his pilot said they were heading to Indianapolis, he realized that it would be like wearing a tuxedo to a petting zoo. And then there's the second question. Why Hook? And why you? You see, Hook is a man that's grown up with a championship legacy, his father, a great champion, his mentor, that being Joe, the greatest champion in the entire industry. But this is about education, and so he wanted him to have a complete one and learn what it's like on the other side, hanging out at the third place table. And he couldn't think of a better man to be that guy than you, Eddie. A man who has never gotten it done and has never crossed the finish line. Who walks around screaming about his potential, but never quite fulfills it. Says, next week you're going to fight your ass off, you're going to bring everything you got. But Eddie, you're not going to cross the finish line, just like every other time. And it'll be because I choked you out in the middle of this ring. So then it was Eddie's turn to retort. Now, Eddie Kingston had a great babyface promo on Collision last week. He beat Shibata, and then he threw this challenge out to Samoa Joe. That's how we got this match at Winter Is Coming next week. And Eddie is still one of the best promos in the entire business across all companies. So I had high hopes for this, and I really thought, okay, they're going to have a face-off. They could give some length to this segment. They could really tap into, you know, their history and coming up on the independent scene together. And, you know, this could be a solid 10 or 12 minute thing. You just let these guys go in the ring with a live mic and let it rip. And I'm not saying that this was bad by any means, but my expectations were kind of elevated here when Eddie took the mic. He said, Samoa Joe, a man who had the greatest title run in Ring of Honor history, who went to war with his mentor Homicide. Now he's out here talking about jets. Says, you sold out hard. You know what Hook learned from me? Perseverance. And he said, guys in the back may ask, why does Eddie yell and scream? I mean, he makes some good points, but why does he yell and scream all the time? Because he gets shit done when he does. Says, this Samoa Joe, he doesn't know. And he doesn't respect the Joe that he knows and respects. He ran through everybody and showed fighting spirit. But now, what is this? You know, jumping people from behind, using a kid like Hook, getting all up in his head, like all those old school guys that you used to call out. Said, it's funny, now you're them. But here's the thing, and he says, I'll make this quick. And I'm like, no, don't. Don't make it quick. Stick around for a while. It's all good. It's all good. He goes, but no, I'll make this quick, because he knows the fans want to get back to the wrestling. And he doesn't have anything to do, so he's going to head back to the hotel and go to bed. Which I laughed at him. Like, he's not even going to stay up and watch the matches. He just wants to go back to the hotel room and catch some Z's. He said, here's the thing, Joe. If you don't bring the Ring of Honor World Champion, if you don't bring the submission machine, that Samoa Joe that made him want to battle and keep battling, he will eat him alive on December 10th. And with that, Eddie tossed the mic down. He made his way to the hotel to get himself some shut-eye. And that was the end of the segment here. I enjoyed it. I thought it was good. I was hoping for more. This was one of those segments that I was looking forward to the most when they announced it for this show. I don't know. Maybe they hit all the key points they had to. They did what they had to do here, but I was hoping for a little bit more out of this. And here's the other thing I'm hoping for also. Eddie Kingston came back in, what, September, right? He had that match with Big Bill at All Out, which was kind of a disaster. And then he was doing the stuff with Hook, and now we know, looking back at it, it kind of feeds into what we're seeing now. So maybe there was some long-term eye towards, you know, what they were going to do here in December. So that's fine. But he hasn't exactly been doing a whole hell of a lot. Now he's challenging for the world championship. You talk about going from 0 to 60 in a hot minute. He's getting a world title match next week against Samoa Joe. I really hope this is not a one-and-done type situation. Because if you want to put Eddie Kingston in a feud here with the world champion, I understand this is not going to, you know, carry on for months on end. But to me, to go in there next week and have one big TV match and that's it and just be done with it would be very disappointing, because there's a lot more you can do here with Eddie Kingston in this spot, even if he's not going to win the world title. I would like to see whatever the outcome is next week. Obviously, he's not going to win the belt, but whatever the outcome is next week, I think you could run this back. If they want to add a stipulation, I guess you could, but they could always run this back at World's End. You know, I know we're going to get back to Hangman. I know Swerve eventually is going to be in the mix, but I do think that you could do another Joe-Eddie Kingston match, and it would get great heat, and people would be really invested in it at World's End because people like Eddie Kingston. So that's my only hope coming out of next week. I know he's not winning, but they could do some sort of disputed finish, fuck finish. It doesn't have to be, you know, Joe pins him and that's it, and then it's on to the next. Because I think that would be a waste, even though I'm sure they're going to want to do Eddie and Hook. That's an inevitable match. But you got to get more than one out of Eddie and Joe. I hope they have more planned for them than just that. So after this, we see the rest of the ops backstage, and Hook said that Joe handled business tonight. Now come next week, he'll finish Eddie off. Powerhouse Hobbs said that there's business to take care of tonight, so they're going to sprinkle some holiday cheer. Last night on Ring of Honor, he said one trio impressed him. Now, I did not see Ring of Honor last night, so I'm like, oh, okay. I wonder who this trio is that he's referring to that apparently impressed him on ROH TV. And he said, the Dark Order. And I said, no, you're kidding me. Seriously, who's the trio that impressed you on Ring of Honor TV? Oh, no, he was serious. He was referring to the Dark Order. I haven't heard their name mentioned on this show in fucking years. But apparently the Dark Order impressed Powerhouse Hobbs. He says, if you can survive tonight against the Ops, then you'll get a trios championship match against himself, Katsuyori Shibata, and Samoa Joe. Hook then said they know the Dark Order are Hangman Page's good friends. So there's the hook there. No pun intended. There's the hook. There's the connection. So they'll have some fun out there with them tonight. So that set up a non-title match for later in the show. Great. We had Gold League action in the Continental Classic. Kazuchika Okada one-on-one against Pac, representing the Death Riders. This is not the first time that these two have clashed. They actually had a fucking banger to open the show last year at Dynasty. They had a great match for the Continental title that Okada won. That match was always going to be a tough one to follow here. Now you're doing a television match. It's a tournament match, but there's nothing really on the line per se here other than points. But they came in with some lofty expectations, if you remember that match from last year. Pac tried a home run lariat. Okada quickly took a powder out of the ring, pulled Pac outside, drove him into the barricade. Okada slowly picked apart Pac back inside, but Pac turned the tables. He took control heading into a commercial break. It was all Pac during the commercial. He remained in control when things came back until Okada fired off a shotgun dropkick. both men were down. DDT spiked Pac, who kicked out at two. Okada went up top for the elbow drop. And then he flipped off the crowd. He wanted a rainmaker. He got backed into the corner. Okada tried an air raid crash. Pac escaped, though. Punk kicked him right through the ropes, followed with a slingshot cutter. Pac built up a head of steam for his lariat, but he got cut off with a picture-perfect Okada dropkick right to the mush. Pac then countered a rainmaker attempt into a Cazadora pin for a very close two. It's the same way that Okada lost last week, by the way, to Kyle Fletcher. Okada, though, popped up. He ran right into a boot. We got a bounce-back German suplex out of the corner by Pac that led to a deadlift German for a near fall. Pac, though, took too long to follow up. And Okada answered with a desperation tombstone. And again, both men were down now for the second time in this match. Okada got cut off on the top by Pac, who hit a superplex. And really, it was more of a brainbuster, it looked like, than a superplex. And then he locked on the brutalizer, only for Okada to quickly counter into a roll-up for the flash pin to win the match and the 3 points. Man, you know, top rope brainbusters, I guess they just don't mean what they used to. At least Okada tried to, you know, sell it like he was loopy after the match when he rolled out of the ring. He looked a little out of it, but yeah, top rope brainbuster basically led to Okada winning the match. Good stuff here. Nothing like their match from Dynasty last year, nor did it get as much time. But still a strong opener. It was a nice bounce-back win for Okada after that loss to Kyle Fletcher on the show last week. I did like how they opened the tournament with what I would consider a pair of upsets last week. As predictable as the final may be, at least they're trying to keep people on their toes, you know, by giving you some matches with outcomes that maybe you wouldn't be expecting, which I can at least appreciate that. But Okada finally gets on the board with 3 points. We go backstage, and we heard from the TNT champion, Mark Briscoe, who says that he's faced Daniel Garcia twice, and he won one, Garcia won the other. But the thing that he took away from it is that Garcia is the real deal. And now, 1 year later, my, how things have changed. Said that he's afraid that Garcia is going through a full-blown death spiral with the Death Riders. And he went to Tony Khan. He said, let's make the match. And Tony told him, I've got the perfect time and place. Cardiff, Wales. Winter is coming, he said. There's going to be two Winter is Coming shows next week. So he says it's going to be an international ass-whooping. I didn't even realize that they were doing a Winter is Coming show in Cardiff. I think that's kind of weird that they would do that and not make that part of the main Winter is Coming Dynamite next week. But I guess they have two shows to do. So the TNT Championship has mostly, I feel like, been defended anyway on Collision. So I guess in that regard, it kind of makes sense to do it there. But just so you know, they're doing the Holiday Bash episode that I mentioned earlier. That's in Manchester, England. That follows Winter is Coming. So we go from Winter is Coming to Holiday Bash, and that's going to be the 3-hour spectacular when they do that show in a couple of weeks. Now backstage, we go to The Demand, Ricochet, and the Gates of Agony. Ricochet being the new national champion. He says over the past week, he's had to keep his phone on Do Not Disturb because he's getting constant calls to save all these promotions and put them on his back. But he's a charitable guy, and he's making his first appearance in Ring of Honor this Friday when he defends his national title against Dalton Castle, a former Ring of Honor world champion. Yes, Final Battle is coming up this week. And since Columbus is a miserable place, he will stick around and give out another shot to another charity case. So, again, Final Battle is in Columbus on Friday. They're staying over for Collision on Saturday. So that was our Ricochet segment for the night. After a break, it was backstage yet again, where Renee Paquette spoke with Mark Briscoe, who we just saw cut a promo in the back. It's right back to Mark Briscoe again. But now he was with Roderick Strong, Orange Cassidy, Willow Nightingale, and Harley Cameron. Cassidy was looking for a high five heading into his Continental Classic match on Collision with Roddy. Roddy, though, barked at him and said, I am not part of the conglomeration, and he's going to beat his ass on Collision. Excalibur then narrated over some footage of Darby Allin in a hospital bed following his loss to the Jet, Kevin Knight, on last week's show. Excalibur said that Darby was not medically cleared to travel, and they hope to have an update on his status on Collision. You know, I find it funny. They're showing this footage. It's almost like overhead footage from a hospital room. And Darby Allin is laid up in the hospital, and he's in a neck brace, and I'm watching this, and I'm like, I find it funny that of all the things Darby Allin has done to himself, all the ridiculously dangerous, crazy, stupid shit that he will do any given week, any given pay-per-view, set himself on fire, takes all these ridiculous bumps, glass, tacks, all this shit, that it was a competitive wrestling match against Kevin Knight last week that put him in the hospital in a neck brace. It's just one of those things, I guess, right? It was a really tough match, I guess, last week. So Darby's laid up in the hospital for now. I just took that to be storyline shit. I'm sure he's fine, as fine as Darby Allin can be. I don't think he has a real injury. I don't think he's going to be bounced out of the tournament. Hopefully they don't get bit by the injury bug the way that WWE has with the John Cena Last Time Is Now tournament. That abomination. We got another Gold League match in the Continental Classic with Kyle Fletcher, who got a big win over Okada last week, against Kevin Knight, who got a big win over Darby Allin last week. So one of them was going to have to lose here. Unless they went to a draw, then I guess they both lose. Don Callis was on commentary. He said that he was putting over Kevin Knight. And he said that Kevin Knight is the only person who can match Fletcher's athleticism. But in the end, it won't matter because Kyle would be too much for him to handle. So back inside, Knight used his speed to send Fletcher out of the ring. He missed a slingshot dive as Fletcher caught him with a leg lariat off the apron. Knight escaped a powerbomb on the apron and turned it into a leaping kick, then a huge slingshot lariat to the floor. There was a pendulum DDT spot where Fletcher got planted for a near fall. Knight tried another DDT. Kyle, though, countered into a brutal lawn dart, into a haluva kick. Knight fought out of a brainbuster. He connected on a high elevation springboard clothesline. Very close near fall. Both men fought to the apron. Knight spiked Fletcher with a DDT. Then quickly back inside, he took too long. Went up for the UFO splash. He got cut off. Fletcher wanted his avalanche brainbuster, but Knight floated over. He trapped Kyle in a tree of woe. Went to the opposite corner, and he hit a coast-to-coast. Coast-to-coast dropkick. So Knight tried the UFO splash again. Fletcher, though, got the knees up, and he cradled him, only for Knight to kick out. Massive Liger Bomb then connects. Again, Knight kicks out at two. The Brainbuster got countered into a cradle. Knight popped up, but he got leveled with a boot, and then he ate a Brainbuster, and that was all she wrote. Kyle Fletcher gets the pin. He gets three more points here in this tournament. He now sits atop the leaderboard in that division with 6 points. I thought this was even better than the Okada and Pac match. Of all the matches tonight, this probably was the best one. This probably was the best of the bunch. Hell of a match here between two of the young top stars in this company, and honestly, two guys that should be future superstars for Tony Khan. Fletcher was already, you know, decently pushed coming into this, but so far, I think in just two matches, Kevin Knight, to me, has been the real standout. It's only been 2 weeks, but he has been the real standout so far. He may not have the most points, but I think he's been sort of the highlight of this tournament. And he could end up benefiting the most out of anybody in this tournament. He could end up being the one who really ends up benefiting more than any other single person if they play their cards right. Of course, it all comes down to what Tony Khan wants to do with him coming out of the Classic. If he just goes back to being a tag team with Speedball, I mean, they make a good team, but so what? Okay. You know, do you want to stay on the same plane or do you want to move up the ladder? I'm sure he would love to move up the ladder. He's got all the tools. He's got all the talent in the world. I would hope that Tony maybe has some ideas for him and that they could pursue that when this tournament is over. But after the match, Callis took the microphone inside the ring and he said that he has something important to say about the Young Bucks. But first, you're going to hear from Kyle Fletcher. And Josh Alexander comes down to the ring, Hechicero. They got the bags of money that they stole. that don't belong to them because they lost at Full Gear. Fletcher said, I'm not feeling the greatest after that match. So Callis took the mic back, but then they just cut to a commercial while Callis was in the middle of ranting and raving. They just went to commercial. Okay. So they come back. Callis tells the Young Bucks, you know, I can forgive a lot of things. I can forgive lying and cheating and even killing someone. But the one thing I cannot forgive for is siding with Kenny Omega. That is simply unforgivable. Callis said he has the Bucks money. He knows Omega's not going to finance them. So if they don't like it for the first time in their lives, let your nuts drop and try to come take it. So here come Matt and Nick Jackson out from the back. They storm down to the ring. Again, a smaller venue, so they didn't exactly have a long distance to run from the stage to the ring. There's a little short aisleway here, but they run to the ring, immediately drop everyone with super kicks. They drop Fletcher with a BTE trigger. Matt Jackson quickly grabs one of the money bags, but before he could open it, Okada comes up from behind him, spins him around, gives him a rainmaker. Nick Jackson then has a face-off with Okada, who flips him off. And before Nick could respond, the family attacks. So Jurassic Express, they rush down to the ring to make the save. They clean house. Jack Perry did the assisted rope walk moonsault onto Alexander and Hechicero outside the ring. In the ring, though, Okada kicked Luchasaurus in his little dino balls. He went low. Perry gets in the ring. And they stall, and there's like a face-off between Perry and Okada. Okada flips him off, and so Perry grabs the middle finger, and he bites it. He bites this man's finger. But guess what happened at this point? El Clone showed up. Oh, my God. It's El Clone and Mark Davis. They hit the ring. They attack. The numbers are too much. When was the last time we even saw El Clone on Dynamite, right? It's been several weeks since we've seen the man himself. So the numbers are simply overwhelming. Callis gets into the ring. He starts punching Matt repeatedly. Okada and Davis and Alexander, they're holding back Nick. Callis was about to go for Nick's eye. He was trying to like fishhook his eye. When we hear Kenny Omega's music. And out comes Omega. He's wearing this fantastic Christmas sweater. I can't really call it an ugly Christmas sweater. It wasn't ugly, but it was definitely a Christmas sweater. It looked like something knitted. I think he was on it. I think it was his likeness was on there. It almost looked like he was holding a dog. I don't know if it was a dog or a cat or what it was. I couldn't really tell. He cleaned house with V-triggers until he ducked an Okada Rainmaker attempt, and he dropped Okada with a Snapdragon. Omega went for a V-trigger to Okada, who quickly bailed out to the floor. And the Bucks and the Jurassic Express, Omega, they all stood tall. The Bucks, though, still don't have their $1 million that they rightfully won. Although I guess they were part of the Callis family team. So, but at least some of the money is supposed to belong to them. But they did not escape with the money. And so that was that. So what is this leading to? It's probably leading to some other, you know, money match. Oh, we had $1 million last time. So what can we do this time to really sweeten the pot? Oh, I know. We'll make it $2 million. And nobody will care. This is what I'm expecting. I'm expecting some sort of trios or multi-man match and some sort of dumb money stipulation. Tony Khan is clearly trying to protect Kenny Omega by not putting him in major singles matches. He's just not doing it. We haven't seen Omega in that big epic singles match in many months. Maybe since the Okada one. But it's been a while. And it's a shame because I'm sure he's doing it to protect his own health. I'm not saying, you know, how dare you not put Kenny Omega in a major singles match and let the guy go out there and kill himself. But it's sad, you know, it's sad because Omega was known as the best bout machine. That was his nickname. And Omega has had so many great matches. You know, he came back from an injury that could have killed him with the diverticulitis and you know, the major surgery that he had. And it was a big recovery period. But I just think back to how this year started when he came back and he had his first match back. And he went out there and he had just a fucking awesome match at the Tokyo Dome with Gabe Kidd. And I'm like, man, this guy hasn't missed a beat. His first match back, you would never know he was out for a year or 13 months or whatever it was. And it gave me hope that, okay, maybe he's not going to be able to do this as often as he was doing it before, but man, we can get some real kick-ass Kenny Omega matches this year. And we did. We had a few, you know, the Okada one at All In. But it's very clear that just physically, he's still going through some shit. And he's talked about it before where, you know, I think he went to Japan. He's got doctors over there. I don't even know what he's being treated for, but you know, I'm sure his whole body is just beaten to shit after all the big matches and the New Japan matches that he had over the years. So clearly it just feels to me like they're just protecting him from himself. So it's too bad. But unfortunately, by doing so, what we end up with are just a bunch of tag matches that just don't really have any meaning, and they all sort of blend together. It's like, all right, we'll have Omega and the Elite, and they'll wrestle the Callis family, and it's like, all right, whatever, who gives a shit? Like, whatever. I feel like I've seen it a million times already. Then after this, speaking of things that I didn't care for, this is my least favorite thing on the show. My least favorite thing on this entire show, and I don't even blame any of the women in this match. The women went out there, they did their job. They did their job to the best of their ability. It was a hardcore holiday death match. In the semifinal round of the AEW Women's Tag Team Championship Tournament, with Toni Storm and Mina Shirakawa taking on Megan Bain and Marina Shafir. This is a stipulation that was added as a result of Toni and Mina winning their four-way match against the other women in the tournament. It's like four teams at Full Gear. They got to choose the stipulation. This is what Toni Storm chose, as she said on the show last week. So you knew what to expect coming into it. How could you not? I mean, we're coming off two Blood and Guts matches. And we have matches like this on a pretty regular basis on TV. So you knew what to expect here. Storm and Mina, they hit the ring. They laid out both heels with a DDT. And then the one of a tornado variety followed that off the apron to the floor. Toni then waffled Marina with a champagne bottle and started stabbing Bane in the head with a broken piece of the bottle. Before Mina came in wielding a giant candy cane, and she used that as a weapon, and we saw the candy cane was wrapped in barbed wire. So Marina Shafir was bleeding from the bottle shot, and maybe it was Shafir, not Bane, but she was bleeding. She was the one who was bleeding in this match. Of course we had blood. Storm and Mina, they tried a double suplex. Bane, though, countered into a suplex of her own. Mina, it looked like Mina landed very awkwardly on her wrist. And she was kind of selling it. It looked like it was bothering her. Hopefully that's all she was doing. But she definitely landed awkwardly on it. Shafir pulled Storm to the floor. Bane launched Mina out of the ring onto Storm outside on the floor. And that took us into a commercial break. After the break, Marina was cracking Mina in the ribs with a frying pan. Storm got ping-ponged between the frying pan and chair shots until Toni ducked and the heels collided. Mina then flew in with a drop kick off the top, driving the chair into Bane's face. Storm quickly brought Bane to the apron, hit a Storm Zero off the apron through a table on the floor. Shafir wrapped her fists in tape and then sank in her mother's milk finish on Mina, which is what she used to beat her Blood and Guts. And she started to fade until Toni threw a broken pool cue into the ring. And Mina was able to reach over and grab it, and she starts stabbing Marina in the head, in the eye, whatever it was. She's stabbing her in the head with this thing. She got a jackknife pin only for a two. Toni set Shafir up for Mina to hit a diving sling blade onto a chair until Bane then broke up the pin. Mina wanted a suplex through a table that was propped up in the corner. Marina, though, countered into a snap suplex, and that allowed Megan to spear Mina through the table and man the back of Mina's head. It looked a little sickening, the way it smacked the table there, the back of her head. Bane tried Fate's Descent, which is her F5, right into Mother's Milk. So Marina was laying on the mat waiting for it, but instead Storm escaped. She gave Megan a Storm Zero right across Marina's midsection. And at this point, Santa Claus, yes, he's on his way down to the ring. He's a little early, by my watch here, it's a little early for Santa Claus to be coming down to the ring, but here he comes. Ho, ho, ho. And he's got a gift. He's got a present in his hand. He comes down to the ring and he gets up on the apron and Marina tries to rip the package away. Santa, though, gives her the middle finger and then pulls down his beard to reveal Luther, who we have not seen in many months. Tony then planted Marina with a German as Luther gave Storm the shoe, which she promptly stabbed Shafir in the head with, the high heel shoe. And she got the big package, which is a small package, but she got it. And there was all kinds of, like, I guess broken glass and tacks and shit. All the usual dumb bullshit that we see in these fucking matches is all over the mat. And so she gives her a small package onto it, and she pins her, and Tony and Mina win. And Marina's, like, picking shit out of her back, and she's all bleeding and in pain. And it's like, who gives a shit? I feel bad even saying that, because these women went in there, and they're using all these weapons, and they're bleeding, and I'm so over this. Like, dude, I am so over this nonsense. Like, I can't bring myself to care. I can't. I would have rather they just go in there and have a great, like, straight wrestling match, semifinal round. Whoever wins, like, it's make or break, right? Do or die. Whoever wins goes to the finals and gets one step closer to becoming the women's tag team champions. And instead it was like every other garbage hardcore match that we see on this show almost every single week. I hated it. This is my least favorite thing on the entire show. But now we know the finals of the tournament. Winter is coming next week. It's going to be Tony and Mina against Harley and Willow. Honestly, that match could go either way. I at the very beginning of all this, went with Tony and Mina. I'm going to stick with my original pick. I'm going to stick with Tony and Mina. I do think that those titles will mean more on them for a period of time, and then they could drop them to either Willow and Harley or whoever they want to drop them to. But Willow and Harley, they're a fun team to watch. I like both women. If they win the titles next week, great. At the end of the day, whatever. Honestly, like, whatever. I'm fine with either team winning. That'll take place on the show next week. They show the Dark Order walking in the back. Evil Uno says, Evil Uno is cutting a promo as these guys are walking. And Evil Uno says, they have the ultimate opportunity tonight. It's been a long time coming. Has it though? Has it really? It's been a long time since we've seen Evil Uno wrestling on Dynamite. It's literally been a year since the last time he was, and actually the last time he was in the ring on Dynamite, I do believe, was in the Dynamite Diamond Ring Battle Royal a year ago. So it's been a year since we've seen this guy. He's been relegated to Ring of Honor ever since. But Hangman Page comes, as they're cutting their promo, Hangman Page is seen walking up behind them. He's got a chain wrapped around his neck. He looks like he's on his way to the ring. And Alex Reynolds stops him. And Reynolds tells him, don't ruin this for us. Like, this is a big moment for them, right? Don't ruin this for us. So Hangman says, fine, you can have your match, but as soon as the match is over, the ops belongs to him. Renee was backstage with Mercedes Moné, the TBS champion, said that we haven't seen her since she lost to Chris Statlander at Full Gear. And Mercedes was not very happy about her bringing that up. And she cut her off and said she's Pro Wrestling Illustrated's top wrestler, top women's wrestler of the year. 13 belts, Moné. She says, does that sound like a failure? She complains about having to defend the Ring of Honor Women's Television Championship against Red Velvet at Final Battle, who she already beat. And she said that since Velvet says that she never shows up to Ring of Honor, she's going to show up tomorrow on ROH TV on Honor Club. And she says, there's a price to pay when you talk down to Moné. So she is defending that TV title on Friday at Final Battle. And I have every belief and expectation that she is going to lose that championship, because this is it right here. We are now at the beginning of what should be the steady downfall of Mercedes. She lost to Chris Statlander, right? Her second opportunity at the world title. And so now the downfall begins. The downward spiral begins. She already beat Red Velvet. She said it herself in this promo. I've already beaten you once before. She beat her right before Full Gear. In fact, I think it was the Dynamite before Full Gear. I think they headlined the show. And she beat Red Velvet, and she did the little CEO dance, and she's got her belt, right? Because she was the interim champion. So now she's the official champion. There's nothing to be gained. Nothing to be gained at all by her going in there and just beating her again. On the Ring of Honor show, like coming into your house and beating you in your own home and then going back to their home, right? What a slap in the face that would be. So unless the idea is that Mercedes is going to begin to make regular appearances on Honor Club and Tony thinks that's going to lead to it, it's going to drive an increase in subscriptions. The only outcome that makes sense is her losing to Red Velvet. And then she can lose to whoever her next opponent is and so on and so on. And this is how you play it out over the next few months. I think she's losing that championship on Friday. I do. We got footage of the Bang Bang Gang calling out FTR for a tag team title shot last week on Collision. Juice Robinson and Austin Gunn pointed out how they beat FTR a few weeks ago, and next time the belts will be theirs. As they're fighting for Colton Gunn, they're fighting for Jay White. It's the first Jay White mention we've had in a while. Back live, FTR and Stokely Hathaway are in the back to respond. Said the Bang Bang Gang doesn't want to be champions for AEW and for the future of this business. They want to be champions to pop some of the boys on the injured list. Cash Wheeler says they'll only be Billy's Boy and Mr. Storm. Dax Harwood said Robinson now thinks he's more than a bag carrier. He thinks he's a big dog. While Austin Gunn will have a job forever thanks to his daddy. And Harwood dares them to put their hands on him again this Saturday on Collision. We had the Ops, Powerhouse Hobbs, Hook, and Shibata against the Dork Order. I mean the Dark Order. The Dark Order. Evil Uno, John Silver, and Alex Reynolds. I can't believe they're still around. They have stood the test of time. They've been there since day one. We're also told at this point that Alicia Atoot is going to have a sit-down interview with Hook on their YouTube channel after Dynamite, explaining his actions. On YouTube! Not the actual television show. The Ops attacked before the bell. Silver fired off a few kicks on Hook, who immediately hit an overhead throw. Reynolds tried a dive. He got cut off. And Uno got knocked from the top to the floor. And the Ops did. I can't even believe this went through a commercial, honestly. I don't even believe this went through a commercial. This went like 6 minutes. That was about 4 minutes longer than this should have gone. So I'm going to skip through their attempt at a comeback here. And all you need to know is that in the end, Hobbs planted Uno with a spine buster and he got the pin. And true to his word, as soon as the match was over, Hangman Page, because you can see the fans in the crowd on the hard cam, they're standing up. Something's going on. Hangman Page is coming through the crowd with his chain around his neck. And he dispatched the Ops dojo dorks. Shibata and Hobbs, they got decked with punches with the chain. Shibata, though, chop blocked. He's holding Hangman, who ducked, and Hobbs ran into his own partner. Hangman then decked Hobbs with, a beer bottle. It got no pop at all. It got no reaction. I don't think people even realized he had done it. He went out to the apron. He tried for a buckshot lariat, and he vaulted into the ring, but Hobbs bailed right as security hit the ring. Hangman took out all four security geeks, ending with a buckshot to one of the Ops, a buckshot to one of the security people as the Ops bailed. We never saw Hook, who Brian Danielson said just ran away during all of this, and the crowd chanted for Swerve, but he wasn't there, so he didn't show up. Not much of a segment here. Renee was backstage with Don Callis, Okada, and Kyle Fletcher. Okada said that this is all Takeshita's fault, which Callis said that in his defense, Takeshita is a little busy getting ready for his Continental Classic match. But then Takeshita showed up. He says, "I'm here." And he had to be held back by Fletcher. Renee then pressed Don Callis. This was great. So she presses Don Callis, right? She's really trying to push this. Why did you only put the continental title on the line instead of putting the international title on the line as well, since the international title and the continental title comprise the unified championship. How come the international title is not on the line here? Because there has been a lot of criticism from at least people online, rightfully, that, you know, you have this unified championship, and now it is no longer unified, at least for the time being. And if Okada doesn't win this tournament, then the unified title is no more. And the belt that you created for it effectively goes on a shelf unless you have somebody else unify the titles. And it's just a lot more involved than it really needs to be, this whole process here. So what they decided to do was they decided to address this issue in a way and have Don Callis be asked this question, this probing question by Renee, so that he can respond. And Callis said to all the uneducated people out there, including this blonde one right here, not me, Renee, he mentioned that Okada went into All In as the Continental Champion. He defeated Kenny Omega to become the International Champion, which resulted in the creation of the Unified title. And that's all well and good. I mean, yes, we know our history, but then she pressed him again on why both titles are not being defended in this tournament. And Callis said, because I'm not an idiot or a degenerate gambler. Fletcher said that they're guaranteed to bring home the Continental title because, of course, all three of them, right? Takeshita, Fletcher, Okada, they're all still in the tournament. And he said the international title is going to stay on Okada's shoulder. And everybody except Takeshita seemed to be in agreement on this. So it wasn't really much of an explanation for why this is being handled in this way. They had Callis play the heel role and say, look, I'm not stupid. You know, we don't want to lose our other title here. The whole situation with the titles is just stupid to begin with. But this was just another segment to, you know, again, just further things a little bit more with Okada and Takeshita, who should be on a collision course for the finals of this tournament. Now we cut to Hangman Page elsewhere in the building, pacing backstage, screaming that for 3 years he fought to get back the AEW World Championship, fighting everybody to get it, but the person who cost him the title, of all people, is Hook. Full Gear to Samoa Joe was the op's finest moment, but know that whether it's him or Eddie Kingston, Hangman is taking that title back. If Hobbs and Shibata want to fight next week, winter is coming. He's not coming alone. You should never come alone. I mean, that should just be a general rule, right? But he goes, I'm not coming alone. You know who's coming for you. You know who's coming for you. Get your affairs in order, he said. So it looks like we're getting a Hangman. He didn't explicitly say it, but it looks like we're getting a Hangman and Swerve tag team on Winter is Coming next week against Hobbs and Shibata. And they close the show with Jon Moxley against the new CMLL World Heavyweight Champion, Claudio Castagnoli, in a battle of the Death Riders here in the Continental Classic. Marina Shafir was with Moxley for his entrance, and they did something a little bit different here. They cut to Renee, who's in the crowd, standing in the crowd, as Moxley is making his entrance. She's like the roving, like, you know, the sideline reporters at an NFL game, you know, Monday Night Football, right? Pam Oliver, right? Maybe she was with Fox at the time, but, you know, she's the sideline. So now they have Renee in the crowd basically doing the same gimmick here. And Renee is talking about how she's, you know, basically saying how the Death Riders are in this Continental Classic. They have multiple people in this tournament. She talked to Moxley earlier. Yeah, this Jon Moxley guy, I talked to him earlier. And Moxley told her that if Claudio wants this, he's going to have to take it, right? But we got this funny visual of her standing there in the crowd as Moxley is walking around her. And he's sort of posing with the fans, and then he just walks right past her. I thought he was going to pull her in for a kiss or something. I mean, I guess that would be completely against the whole Jon Moxley character. He's not very affectionate. He's very laser-focused on the task at hand. So he ignored his wife, and he just walked to the ring, and that was that. Claudio had Wheeler Yuta, Daniel Garcia, and Pac by his side during his entrance. They did not come down to the ring because the rule is that you're not allowed to have anybody at ringside, right? Unless you're Don Callis, and then you could do commentary. Why is it okay for Don Callis, by the way, to do commentary? What if Marina Shafir, what if Wheeler Yuta wanted to do commentary for the match? Why is Don Callis allowed to do commentary? Not that I want to hear Wheeler Yuta doing commentary during the match. I'm just saying it's this weird loophole that it would bother me. You know, if I was in the tournament, I would say that's not fair. So they didn't come to the ring with Claudia. They aired footage of Claudia winning the CMLL world title from Gran Guerrero. I think that was on Friday. Bryan Danielson wisely pointed out how no one is supposed to be at ringside. Everyone is banned, so he's questioning why Marina Shafir is out there, because she's right there. She's at ringside. And right on cue as he says this, Bryce Remsburg sends her to the back. So we got a test of strength early on, which Danielson said was ill-advised on Moxley's part. Claudio won that battle. Brought Moxley down, hit a double stomp. Moxley gouges the eye. Claudio, though, hits a backbreaker. And that takes us into a commercial break. Callis is not a wrestler. Who gives a shit? The rule is not no wrestlers allowed at ringside. The rule is no one is allowed at ringside. No managers, no wrestlers. No. And by the way, Callis was a wrestler. If we want to be technical about it. Don Callis actually was a wrestler at one point. Something that he and Bobby Heenan had in common. Bobby Heenan started as a manager. I'm sorry. Bobby Heenan started as a wrestler before he became a manager. Don Callis was a wrestler before he became a manager. Paul Heyman was not a wrestler. He was many things. He was a photographer. He was an announcer. And then a manager. And then a promoter. And then he was a manager again, but he doesn't call himself a manager. He was the advocate. He was the wise man. He was the oracle. But he never wrestled. It's the one thing he does not have in common with Heenan or with Don Callis. So we come back from the break. Both men are slugging it out. Moxley, your mind is going to be blown when I tell you this. You are not going to believe me, but I have to be honest with you. Shocking as it may be, John Moxley was bleeding. I know. I can't believe it. I cannot believe that John Moxley was bleeding here, but of course he was. And he tried a drop kick, but he got caught right into a giant swing. And after, I think it was 8 revolutions, Claudio sank in a sharpshooter. Moxley, though, crawled to the ropes, so Claudio switched to a crossface. Moxley escaped the crossface into a rear naked choke. Claudio, though, powered up. He swung Moxley around. He started trading forearms. Claudio got sent to the floor. Moxley hit a tope out to the floor. And back inside, Moxley hit a cutter. Claudio, though, popped up into a desperation clothesline. And we got a double down right around the 10-minute call here in this match. I believe they had a 20-minute time limit. Yes, I know. Everybody in the chat, it's shocking. Shocking, I tell you. So Moxley tried another sleeper hold. Claudio spun out into a Gotch-style pile driver attempt. Moxley, though, got a jackknife pin. Claudio rolled out of it. Both men stumbled to their feet where Moxley swung for the fences with a lariat that was right into another double down here. Moxley was up first, though. He hit a curb stomp for a near fall. And the rear naked choke was applied. Claudio, though, again powered up. So Moxley went to the guillotine. Claudio threw Moxley outside to the floor, and then he went out and he hit a charging uppercut and a leaping double stomp up against the barricade. Back inside, a Ricola bomb followed, but Moxley kicked out. We got a stare down as Moxley slowly rose to his feet, and they traded shots until Moxley hit a paradigm shift. And at that point, we got a 15-minute time call from the ring announcer with 5 remaining. As Moxley pulled himself up, he's in the corner, he's pulling himself up right as Claudio charges into the corner and took his head off with an uppercut. And he covers him and he pins him to win the match and to earn himself another 3 points. We were already 10 minutes past the hour by this point, so we were well into overtime on this show. And after the match was over, the rest of the Death Riders made their way out, and they checked on both men, and they faded to black right as Claudio left the ring, and he was walking towards where Moxley was by the barricade. And so they, like, he got right to Moxley. Not that he was going after Moxley. He was probably walking right by him, but just as he was getting up to Moxley, that's the part where they decided to cut away. And the show ended. So we didn't get any sort of interaction between them whatsoever. Not even a glance, a stare, nothing, which was very disappointing and very underwhelming. Because I was hoping for something, like maybe not a turn or a major angle, because they went so fucking overtime that they weren't going to have time for it, but something. And there was nothing. They just went off the air with that. But the key here is Bryan Danielson on commentary offered this little nugget here when he said, "When we were in the Blackpool Combat Club together, I was never able to defeat Jon Moxley. That's why we saw him as the leader. Claudio Castagnoli has just defeated Jon Moxley." So one would think that's going to end up being a very important line. I thought the match itself, it was good. They had a hard-hitting match. I guess it went about 15 minutes because they had the five-minute time call right as the match ended. So it was good, but the thing is, the crowd just was ice cold for it. Until the last 2 minutes. The last 2 minutes of the match woke them up. But they were very, very quiet for the majority of the match. At the beginning of the match, it was kind of funny. There was one guy in the crowd who started chanting, "Holy shit." He tried to get a "Holy shit" chant going, and it just died a death. Like, it didn't go anywhere. They didn't have anybody to cheer for. I mean, it's the fucking Death Riders. It's the Death Riders. And you have heel against heels. So who are the people supposed to cheer for here, right? Anytime you do heel against heel, depending on who it is that's in the ring. We just saw this with Gunther and Solo Sikoa. And I never would have predicted this. If you would have said to me, "Hey, look, we're going into a week here where we have a tournament on WWE television and we have a tournament on AEW television. And we're going to have two key matches where it's heel against heel. We have Claudio and Mox. We have Gunther and Solo Sikoa." And if you told me one of those matches is going to get over big in front of the crowd, I would have said, "Oh, okay, it's going to be Moxley and Claudio," right? Because it ties into this whole Death Rider stuff and, you know, it could lead to something big. So it's probably that match. Nope. The crowd was fully invested in Gunther and Solo Sikoa, I'd say about halfway through. And it certainly sounded that way more so than it did here. And that's something I never would have predicted. And they both ended up being good matches. I enjoyed that match, and this match was good too. But that is something I would not have predicted if you would have asked me that question at the beginning of this week. But, you know, it just, again, suddenly ended here as they were starting to get into it, right? As Justin Roberts said, 15 minutes, five remaining. And then we had that sudden finish. Claudio wins. He's now atop the leaderboard in that league with 6 points. There was no angle after. It still feels like it's coming, and we're just going to have to just wait it out, you know, until I guess the tournament is over. But they have to be preparing for a change of leadership here in this group. And if they're going to keep the Death Riders going and Jon Moxley is going to be the odd man out, Claudio makes sense, you know, to be that guy. You know, Claudio may not be the flashiest guy. He may not, you know, he doesn't have the kind of charisma that you would see in like a group leader, someone who would normally occupy that position. But if they were going to keep this shit going and just get rid of Moxley, right, or turn Moxley babyface and have somebody else lead the charge, at least for a period of time, Claudio would make sense to be that guy. And I'll give them credit. You know, when he comes out, he's had a few main events on TV recently with the music he has, the way they shoot his entrance. They have shot his entrance in a way that makes him feel like a much bigger deal. I think the music has a lot to do with it, but it's also just the camera work and everything. And I wonder if that's been done intentionally in preparation of him maybe taking the reins of the Death Riders. I would also be fine with the whole group just imploding and everybody going their separate ways. That would be fine with me too. But whatever the big angle is going to be, if we're going to get one, we're going to have to wait probably until the end of this tournament and then see, you know, where things stand. Because none of the Death Riders are going to the finals of this tournament. I can't imagine that they're not going to do Takeshita and Okada in the finals of this tournament. I can't imagine that. So we'll see. A few more weeks, I guess we're going to have to wait. Just like we're going to have to wait a few more weeks to find out the mystery man on Raw. We're going to have to wait a few more weeks for the big Austin Theory reveal. They're going to drag this out a little bit longer also. Now, I look ahead to the end of this tournament. We have a few more weeks. And the predictable Final Four. Yeah, the final four from both leagues would be Okada, Fletcher, topping the Gold League, the two of them. And then Claudio and Takeshita topping the Blue League, right? Those are the matches that would seem to make the most sense. I would swap out Kyle Fletcher for Kevin Knight. And I would have it come down to Kevin Knight and Okada. Because I think this could really be a vehicle for Kevin Knight. But more so, I don't think you want to come down to four heels. I know people tend to like Takeshita, but he's still a fucking heel. You know, he's part of the Callis family. And so you basically have four heels in that situation, which is crazy to me. So I feel like you got to throw a Kevin Knight in there and have him in there in the league final. And then ultimately do Okada and Takeshita in the actual final at World's End. So that's what I would do. I would just kind of swap him out for Kyle Fletcher in that situation. But that was Dynamite. Now next week is Winter is Coming. It is Samoa Joe defending the AEW World Championship against Eddie Kingston. And we have the Babes of Wrath taking on the Timeless Love Bombs. That is the finals of the AEW Women's Tag Team Championship Tournament. Again, I'm fine with either team winning, but I'm sticking with the Love Bombs to walk away with those titles next week. There's other stuff that was announced for Collision. If that is of interest to you, then you will know where to find Collision if that is your thing on the weekends. Let's take a look at the Twitter poll here. What did you think of Dynamite for December 3rd? Look at this split that we have right here. 50.5% thumbs up. 49.5% thumbs down. Man, it's like an election. It's like these elections now that are so divided right down the middle. Look at this. 50-49. Still got another day left in the poll. So this might be so close, we might have to trigger a recount. At Solomonster on X. You can go vote. We're going to have to trigger a recount here with this poll. We got some good wrestling, but not the most exciting show. Get into your super chats here. Hey Shay, what's going on? Thanks for being my number one on Spotify. I loved your message. Well, I love that you love that message. I hope everybody saw the video. I don't know if everybody saw the little video message there at the end of your Spotify Wrapped that I recorded, but it should pop up on there for you. But yeah, I've been getting messages all day from people showing me how many minutes, how many hours they've been listening to the Sound Off all year. I'm their number one. I'm in their top three. I love it. Keep it coming. I love seeing that. It's awesome. We got Meat. Number one podcast on my Spotify Wrapped. Shout out to the Sound Off. Hell yeah. Shout out to the Sound Off. Dude Here 73, the $22 super chat. If there's one thing we haven't gotten enough of, it's hardcore matches and blood on these shows. After seeing the standoff between the Callis family and the Elite, it feels like Tony Khan is cooking up another blood and guts match. God, it does feel that way, doesn't it? You know, for all the casino gauntlets he loves to do, it wouldn't shock me if we got another blood and guts match in a month. I think it's more likely with them it'll be some sort of stupid money match, though. Not the the hardcore stuff. Oz and Glorious with a 15 says, Dino Balls. I love Kenny, but the overselling and the actual health problems and the diverticulitis commentary is really taking away from my enjoyment of seeing him at all. Similar to Danielson's final run. Yeah, it just gets to a point where you almost feel guilty, you know? Because he is such a great wrestler, and I just would love to see him having these epic singles matches against all these people, and like what Kyle Fletcher did to him. We never got that match. And clearly Tony Khan is just trying to protect him and does not want him, because there's no reason why we never got that match. Now, had Andrade not been pulled from television, would we have gotten Kenny against Andrade, maybe at Full Gear? Probably not, because again, I think he's being protected at the moment from having a big singles match, but that would have been another great one. But I see him out there, and I don't know. I don't want to say he looks terrible, but he doesn't look like himself. He looks like he's in pain. I don't know. It's kind of weird. Like, Kenny has talked about it. Like, I'm doing okay. I'm doing well. I don't know. Like, when he's out there sometimes, I look at his face and it looks like he's suffering. And I'm like, I don't know. Maybe he shouldn't be out there at all. So I see what you're saying. I don't have the same level of enjoyment when I see him on TV now. And if he really is hurting, and if he is dealing still with injuries, then I think he should be off TV. And I think he should just take the time to heal and get back to as close to 100% as he can be, so that we can get him back to have, you know, every now and then, those matches that I know people would love to see him have. Bender McSimpson says, it may be confusing and unnecessary, but I like that the unified title only exists when the international and continental titles are combined. It's like a level up for the belts. It's unique. Yeah, it's really not, though. It's not really all that unique. I mean, there have been... We had Roman Reigns walking around for... how many months? With two titles? I mean, I guess they didn't create a third belt, technically, like a brand new belt, until they had... Well, actually, they did. I mean, they had that new WWE Championship with the gold backing. I don't know. I it doesn't do anything for me. I just think the whole thing is unnecessarily convoluted. I know Tony Khan loves the All Japan Triple Crown and all that kind of stuff. Maybe this is his way of trying to tap into that concept, I guess, but there's just so many other ones. I find myself, I don't give a shit. Now we have the national title. Who cares? Oz says, Bane's entrance alone was better than Snore Games. And Solo's annual December burnout is still undefeated. No, it's just that, you know, both companies, frankly, are not terribly interesting right now. Wrestling is just kind of fucking boring at the moment, so... And part of it is December. But honestly, wrestling in general, when it comes to the main promotions, we're talking about these two main promotions, is not terribly exciting at the moment. It's really not. Also, hit that like button. Let's get Be the Booker. Where are we? Let's see. We went up to 321. So, probably not tonight. And he says, Nirvana's Nevermind is five pure bangers in a row. Yeah, some good stuff on there. And the Juliet with a 10. Yeah, it looks like this will be it. Do you think Darby's hospitalization is real or a work? Also, why WWE did you upload the full Brock and Cena match from WrestlePalooza on YouTube? You'd have to ask WWE why they did that. I saw they uploaded and they were promoting on their social media that we have uploaded the full match between John Cena and Brock Lesnar from Wrestlepalooza. Like, watch it now. And I'm like, no. I wish I didn't see it the first time. Why would I go back and watch it again? It's even dumber in hindsight than it was the night that it happened. Don't bother watching that match. You can go on the Vault channel, though. They got some gems on there. They got some quality stuff on there. Next time I'm with you live is going to be Friday night. We have the finals. The finals of this Last Time Is Now tournament. We've reached the end. It's Gunther against LA Knight. And the winner of that match will go on to Saturday night's main event to wrestle John Cena on December 13th. And hopefully we'll have another Ilya Dragunov U.S. title open challenge because we didn't have one last week on that tape show. So we should be getting one this week. And beyond that, I don't know. We'll see if Cody is there and Jacob Fatu may be back very soon. I don't know if it'll be this week, but we'll see what's going on Friday night. So come hang out with me then. And if you missed the Raw post show on Monday, we had some fun with that show. We had a big night on Monday night. And of course, episode 940 of the Sound Off from this past weekend. Always there for your listening pleasure. Juliet says, at least the first Cena-Brock squash was entertaining. Yeah. Yeah, it was actually very unique because never in my life of watching WWE have I ever seen a main event star at the level of a John Cena be so giving as to go in there in the main event of a pay-per-view, like a SummerSlam, and get squashed. Like, it wasn't even competitive. He was squashed in the middle of a pay-per-view main event on arguably their second biggest pay-per-view of the year. Can you imagine Hogan, Savage, Warrior, Austin, Undertaker, Brett, Shawn, any of those guys, especially Shawn, any of those guys going in there and saying, okay, yeah, sure. Yeah, you can squash me. So it was definitely unexpected. It was shocking. And we were coming off Brock being the one who was chosen to end the Undertaker's undefeated streak at WrestleMania. And so what do? You got to keep the guy strong, right? I would not have had the Undertaker's undefeated streak end at WrestleMania that year to Brock Lesnar, who didn't fucking need it, but they did. And it's like, okay, well, this is what we have to do here because this guy's unstoppable now. He's unbeatable. So that was unique because we had not seen that before. And then we saw what they did at Wrestlepalooza and there was absolutely no follow-up to it whatsoever. Like in hindsight, looking back, it wasn't even like they ended up in the War Games match together. Like Brock was in there, Cena was not. I remember people a few months ago were like, oh, it's the Rocky story, Solomonster. It's going to be the Rocky story. And John Cena in his final match is going to triumph over the Beast. Really? How'd that work out? Hey, Justin, thank you for the 15. Justin's on one tonight. Yeah, no, Austin walked out because Austin had a lot of shit going on at the time. It was a very stupid thing to walk out like that, but he was not wrong in the reasoning for wanting to walk out. Like, basically what was happening is Austin was very publicly vocal about WWE creative being shit at the time. He thought the writing was shit and was not shy about basically in so many words saying that. He said it on Bite This, which used to be their official audio show. And so there were people, including Vince probably, but there were people on the creative team who were not really happy with Austin about that. And it's not a surprise that within a few weeks, right, it's like, oh, so we're going to have you lose to this new guy in a King of the Ring qualifying match, not even a tournament match, a qualifying match on television. And it's either it's unannounced or it was announced. It was going to be announced. No, it was unannounced. Right. They were going to announce it like that night at the beginning of the show. Like everything about that was so stupid. And he was right to be upset about that. Like that would have been incredibly fucking dumb. But the reason they were doing it is because they were just not happy with Austin. They were being petty. They were being a bunch of petty bitches. And they were taking someone who was a big box office attraction for them, and they were marginalizing him on purpose because they were unhappy with comments he made about their creative prowess. That's really what led to the Austin walkout. So, I mean, he, you know, walking out and doing it the way that he did it, not the right way to go about doing things, but he was absolutely 100% correct in his reasoning for why he thought it was stupid and he didn't want to do it. He was 100% right. That's why Vince tried to get Russo, to get Austin to come back. I don't know if it was to try to get Austin to come back. I think that he clearly realized that there were some changes that were needed, because it was right around that same time. It was June. I want to say it was June. It actually might have even been before Austin walked out. I'm trying to remember if it was early June or maybe after that, that he brought Russo back, because Austin walked out in like mid-June. But Russo came back. Like, the decision was made. And Russo came back and was brought into a meeting. And it was basically after that one meeting, it was very clear that this is not going to work. So it was almost like the Grandpa Simpson meme where he walks into the bar, right? Puts his hat on the hat rack, immediately turns around, puts his hat back on and walks out. That was Vince Russo's return in 2002. I don't know that he was brought back specifically to try to get Austin to come back, though. Do I know anyone at the star level of Cena losing in the way that he did to Brock Lesnar twice? Being squashed by The Undertaker. And lastly, being squashed by Solo. Oh my God, that's right. Solo Sikoa. Yeah, that's another great example, actually. The Undertaker, WrestleMania 34. You know, he comes in thinking, hey, I'm training. Because Undertaker, it took him a year to train for a match at that point. He put all this work in to train, get his body to where it needed to be, figuring I'm going to go in there and have a 30-minute match at WrestleMania with John Cena. And he gets there and Vince is like, yeah, it's going to be a 5-minute match. And he thought he was ribbing him. He's like, you're kidding me, right? And he was hot. Like, he was pissed. Like, no, we're doing a full fucking match. And Vince is like, no, you're not. This is going to be you going in there. And you're basically going to squash John Cena in like 4 minutes, 5 minutes, and that's going to be it. And I don't even think it went 5 minutes. I legit think the match was 3.5 minutes. That's Undertaker and John Cena at WrestleMania. And the only match they ever had was a throwaway squash. What a fucking waste. I always said, like, when The Undertaker's streak was still intact, I said this so many times on the podcast at that time. So now we're going back over a decade. And I said, man, you know, with that streak still intact, and I'm not sure which WrestleMania would have been the right time to do it. Probably 29, but they had their fucking Cena and Rock shit to do. But you do Undertaker against John Cena when John Cena was still like in his Super Cena phase. People were kind of sick of it. He always wins, or he wins more than he loses. And so you have the streak on the line. And the fans would have bought into the idea that, oh my God, Vince McMahon is going to have John Cena be the one to break the streak. Can you imagine the drama around some of those near falls? Fucking all the attitude adjustments and stuff. Like, it could have worked. It could have been an amazing match, honestly, just built around all that drama. And the people just being relieved every time The Undertaker would kick out of a near fall. As soon as the streak ended, that was it. Like, the magic was gone. You could do Undertaker and John Cena, but it wasn't going to mean the same thing at that point. But I still think they deserve to have an actual fucking match and not some 3-minute squash the way that they did. So no, to answer your question, no, I cannot think of another main event level performer in the history of certainly this company that lost in the way that he did on those major shows to multiple people. There is none. There's nobody else. There is absolutely nobody else who has done that. I can very confidently say that. Duff's Vids. I was talking to my friend about science. He said that he didn't understand cloning. I said, that makes two of us. Get it? Because cloning is two of you. I'm just making sure you understand. It's good to hear from you, Defs. I actually like that one. Yeah, can you imagine the heat Cena would have had going into that? It would have been molten. It would have been molten. How did we never get that fucking match? All right, I'm going to head out. I'll see you guys on Friday night. I almost yanked these things out of my ears. I almost hit the button. I was ready to call it a night. And I look down and I see Leopoldo, and I see Duff's Vids, and I see the Juliet, and I hear the fucking learning tree, and then I see Oz with a $10 super chat gets us to the goal tonight. If you can believe this. And then we have Mr. Ozone. Time for Be the Booker. And we have Duff's again. I was diagnosed with a fear of German sausages. I fear the worst, he says. W-U-R-S-T. He fears the worst. Be the Booker, he says. Oh, man. Ben says, yes. He goes, you are black. I'm black? Well, I don't know about that, but I'm back. I'm certainly black. I mean, I don't know. Maybe there's some sort of weird filter on your screen. I'm back, though. I'm not black, but I'm back. And guess what? That means that we have unlocked. We may not have hit the regular likes goal, but because we hit the special goal, that means that you are actually going to get some Be the Booker action right now.
Ladies,
I can't believe it.
It is now time to Be the Booker.
We're black, baby. We're black. Here we go. Be the Booker time. I didn't think this was going to happen. I didn't think this was going to be a reality tonight. You know how many people probably turned off and they're going to be so pissed off when they find out that they weren't able to be a part of this live? See, that's why you guys stick around at the end of these streams. You never know what's going to happen. Okay, here we go. Tag team, Be the Booker. Black by popular demand. Hey. Christmas, it's an early Christmas. Actually, it's not a Christmas miracle. It's a Festivus miracle. Actually, it might be a Festivus nightmare because we just landed on the Bushwhackers. That is not how I wanted to start out, Be the Booker. I didn't want to start out with the Bushwhackers. I think we may end up regretting this decision. The Bushwhackers are going to be stepping into the ring. Oh my, I am most definitely regretting this decision. The Bushwhackers against Men on a Mission. So we're in the lean years here of WWE. We're in the half empty houses era of WWE. Business is not booming right now. That's where we are. all that stalling for this. Hey, be careful what you wish for. Well, it can't be any worse here. Let's do Women's Be the Booker. We have, oh boy, Nia Jax. We go from now I want you to realize what we've done here so far, okay? We've gone from the Bushwhackers to Men on a Mission to now Nia Jax. I'm almost afraid to continue this to see where this is going to take us. Get a drum roll going. Nia Jax. Well, okay, so this is an improvement against Willow Nightingale. Nia Jax has shown that she can have good matches. It does depend on who she's in the ring with, and I say that if you put her in the ring with Willow Nightingale, you will get a good match. It still depends on who she's in the ring with, though. She's not a ring general who's going to go in there and just shit out great matches. With Willow Nightingale, though, I'm confident they would have a good match. So we turn that one around. Now we come to our main event, and I don't know what to expect. Like, Punch McLightning in the chat is still telling people, hey, 400 likes. We got another Be the... Look, if you hit 400, we do another Be the Booker. It's up to you guys. We're only 13 likes away. But I'm assuming this will be our main event here. So let's see if we can make this a good one. We have the Tribal Chief, the OTC, the head of the table, the big dog. Did I miss any? Roman Reigns in the main event, as he apparently will be at WrestleMania next year, against Cody Rhodes. Let's see who Roman Reigns is going to use one of his half a dozen matches here to challenge. It will be Sheamus, who looks almost translucent here in this image. Roman Reigns and Sheamus, that was a match at one time. I do recall Sheamus cashing in his money in the bank, in fact, on Roman Reigns. I believe it might have been 10 years ago at Survivor Series to win the WWE Championship. So there you go. We ended up, it was not looking good, and we ended up getting 2 out of 3. And son of a bitch, I just looked, and we are at 409. Which means that we went from having 0 Be the Booker to getting 2 rounds. How the hell did that happen? How did that even happen? Hey, S. Fallen, with 56 months of membership. Super late. Did you get your noodle pudding last week, Solo? Yes, I did. And it was very good. I was very happy. Thank you for asking. You're just in time, because we have another round of Be the Booker here. I can't believe it. It truly is a holiday miracle. All right, we're picking stipulations here. So let us see what is going to happen here, because we are going to book ourselves an Ultimate X match. How many people are in Ultimate X usually? 5? 6? Let me know in the chat. How many people typically are in Ultimate X? And I will pick that number of people. I know it can't be more than 6. I don't remember if it was 5 or 6, though. Am I going to cover TNA's first show on AMC on January 15th? It is very likely, yes. I probably will. I expect that Mike Santana is winning the belt back that night. Six people? Oh, man. All right. Well, let's do it. We're picking 6 people. I guess that's what we're doing here. We got to pick 6 dudes here for the Ultimate X. This should be very interesting, considering who's in here. We have Demon Balor. All right, we start out with Finn. We have Big Daddy Cool Diesel is going to be hanging upside down trying to grab that X. You know, if his leg gives out from all the way up there, that could be catastrophic. I don't think Kevin Nash should be climbing the Ultimate X structure. Demon Finn, Diesel, Razor Ramon. We got Diesel and Razor in an Ultimate X match. That's crazy. All right, we're halfway there. We got 3 out of 6. Let's see. Who's joining them? We have Gymnasium is going to be part of the Ultimate X match. We have a newcomer here making his Be the Booker debut. Ladies and gentlemen, it is Gymnasium. who looks an awful lot like former NXT North American champion Wes Lee. Maybe they're related in some way. This is an amazing match so far. We have the Demon, we have Diesel and Razor, and we have Gymnasium. This is the best Ultimate X field ever. Joining them will be Aleister Black. Well, this is Malakai, but Aleister Black. And we have one more. We need one more name to complete the field. Oh, you can't do this. No, we can't do this. We have Razor Ramon. We already have Razor. Oh, you know what? Maybe we call it the fake Razor. We have real Razor, and then we have fake Razor. Nah, we gotta pick a different one. I can't believe we landed on him twice. Two different images, no less. We landed on Razor Ramon twice in the Ultimate X match. This match is feeding families, says Roderick. And we have The Fiend, Bray Wyatt. So we have Demon Balor and The Fiend are going to be in the same match. The Fiend, Demon Balor, Diesel, Razor, Aleister Black, and Gymnasium. This is an incredible match, and I'm going with Gymnasium for the shock win in Ultimate X. How do we even top what we just did? We have two more matches to book. How the hell are we going to top that? It's an all-time classic. You're damn right it is. We go from that to just a regular old table match. It seems kind of underwhelming by comparison. All right, we're going to have a women's table match with Taya Valkyrie, who I believe is still under contract to AEW, but you would never know it by watching TV. I'm just assuming. I mean, are her and Hennigan actually still under contract? I honestly don't even know. I believe they are. I assume they're in Ring of Honor. Taya Valkyrie and Becky Lynch in a table match. I think that could actually be very good. And now we need a tag team match. God Phoenix, he's new here. He's completely confused by what's going on here. Don't worry, I'm about as confused as you probably are right now. So you're not alone. But this is all random. So let's see here. We need a tag team stipulation, a parking lot brawl. A tag team parking. We've never had one of these before. We've never had a tag team parking lot brawl. So this will be kind of interesting. We're going to have all the cars in a circle, and then we're going to have four guys basically beating the hell out of each other. And we have the Usos. Look at this. Get ready, everybody. It's Big Jim, and it's main event, Jey Uso. Uh-huh. Four letters, one word. Run it back. Can you imagine, like, he's out there in the parking lot and they're wearing, like, their street clothes and their fists are all taped up and this big brawl is about to break out and Jey just, like, looks into the camera and just does this and says, run it back, and this fucking music just starts playing from where, I don't know, and he starts yeeting in the middle of this parking lot brawl. More Samoans, yes. Get away from him. You cannot get away from them. But who are they going to be wrestling? That's the question. They're going to be wrestling Los Matadores. And there is El Torito, the Bull. Yeah, that sounds pretty bad. Although it's two families, though. At least it's a family affair. Right? We got two brothers against brother here in this match. Kind of sad that we have to end it on that note. I was kind of hoping we would do a little bit better than that. Hey, Martin Dolan. Not Dolan, Dordan. Look like an L to me. Martin, what's going on, man? You just got the weirdest installment of Be the Booker that I've seen in a very long time. Damien the Fiend, hello. How are you? A tables match and now a parking lot brawl. Are you trying to book Wednesday Night Dynamite? No, I didn't have enough blood, so I don't think I meet the qualifications needed. MGM Ballin', 17 months of channel membership. Spotify Wrapped had you at number one, as expected. Sunday sound off on Monday during the work, or during work, every week got us here. Thank you, Solo. Thank you, MGM Ballin'. I'm glad I can be your number one. I'm glad I can be your Huckleberry. Baby. Oz and Gloria says, Taya is on TV every week with MXM. Yeah, well, I don't watch that. I get enough wrestling as it is. I'm talking about, like, the main show. When was the last time she did anything of any real, like, meaningful substance? I could say the same thing, of course, for Deonna Purrazzo. And we got Rick SX. That's why I respect Cena a lot, because of how he put people over and got squashed in his matches, even though he was a top guy. He was more giving than most top guys would have been. There are top guys that have been very giving. Rock was one of those guys. Jericho was one of those guys. But there are plenty of stars who were not as giving and who were very paranoid, or and frankly, Austin was one of those people. Very paranoid, very protective of their spot. It's just a matter of personality, you know? Different personalities, different people who are comfortable in their own skin, who are comfortable knowing their spot will still be there. You know, hey, if I lose a big match, you know, my spot will still be there. It's an interesting thing, you know, the psyche of a top main event wrestler. And I do think it's different today than it would have been 20, 30 years ago, 40 years ago. I think, you know, maybe guys today who don't care as much about that sort of thing, they just want to go out there and put on the best show possible. I don't know. Maybe they would have fallen victim to the same thing back then. It's just a very different wrestling business now. I think CM Punk actually, CM Punk of all people recently just made this comment where the world champion back in the day, right, the world champion would get paid more than the other guys would. Or at least if you were in the main event of the show, you made more money, right? It was something like that. He says, not like that now, at least not in WWE. It's not like that anymore. Like, you know what you're going to get paid, and it's not going to change, whether you're in the opening match or the main event match. So a lot of the top guys now, they don't give a shit if they're in the main event or not. They'll curtain jerk the show. What do they give a shit? They're making the same amount of money. Getting the belts, getting the strap, you know, it doesn't mean what it used to mean. The business is just, it's different in many ways when it comes to that sort of thing. John Cena's dad wants his son to face Kurt Angle. Well, then it's a good thing that John Cena's dad is not booking the show. Because Kurt Angle could barely move. Power Spying Games, you've been number one on my Spotify Wrapped for 3 years. Wow. Only three out of the 18, huh? I'm kidding. Thank you, Power Spying Games. Am I going to be emotional during Cena's last match? He debuted when I was 11. I just turned 35. I'm going to be a bitch, and I don't care, to be honest. I think I might be. I think I might be. I think it'll be an emotional thing when he makes that last entrance. He's going to get this, you know, monster reaction. He'll be soaking it up. And he's not one to usually betray his emotions on TV. And I think he might, you know, he might lose it that night. And so, you know, it might get to me. I'm not going to be bawling here, but, you know, yeah, I think it might get to me. I can be an emotional guy. I'm not afraid to admit. Rick SX says, even John Cena's match with Dominic Mysterio, he put over and basically got manhandled by the females from the Judgment Day. Do you think any top guys would have done that? Very few. Very few. I mean, look, that was an issue years ago. There were people that didn't want to take bumps for China, you know, when she was wrestling the men. I remember some guys talking about that. Jeff Jarrett didn't have an issue with it. Other people, you know, Jericho, some people didn't have an issue with it, but there were guys who were like, they would have been like, absolutely not. I'm not taking a bump for her. Not in a million years. John Cena's in there taking fucking Tejano bombs and fucking code reds from Roxanne Perez, who's like half his size. He doesn't give a shit. He's got one foot out the door. He's always been very like, whatever you want me to do, I'll do it. He doesn't rock the boat. He doesn't cause problems. Why do you think he was on top for so long? He's like the model employee. Whatever you want me to do, okay, sir. I'll do it to the best of my ability. He's got his Hollywood career waiting for him. He's got, you know, one match left. He doesn't care. It's like, whatever you want me to do, I'll do. Next year, get ready for the Jericho retirement tour. Now, I don't think Jericho is ready to retire yet. Is Cena going to close the show and give a farewell speech in the ring after? Yeah, I would certainly hope that they give him some mic time at the end of that show. I sure hope so. And it's not airing on NBC, so there shouldn't be this concern of going over and then Peacock, for example, has, and maybe in certain international markets it could be problematic, but correct me if I'm wrong, all you fine folks in the UK and elsewhere, but I think it's still airing on Netflix, right? I believe it airs on maybe on YouTube, but I think it airs on Netflix. Here it's going to be on Peacock only, and there shouldn't be any limitations. So when that match is over, win, lose, or draw, I mean, the only way to go with it would be to let Cena take the microphone and speak his mind. And then don't be surprised if WWE surprises him with certain people. I've been saying, like, I don't know what his schedule is like, if he's in the middle of filming anything, but like Big Dave Bautista, he's a DC guy. And his career in many ways is tied to John Cena. It would be appropriate for him to be there as a guest. Maybe they do something with Cena like what they did with Ric Flair when he had that great segment on Raw after he lost to Shawn Michaels at WrestleMania, where they trotted out all of these different legends from his past and guys he worked with, Harley Race and Ricky Steamboat, and I think Arn Anderson was there, all these different people. I could see them doing something like that with Cena, where they trot out all these big names and maybe even some surprises that he's not expecting. And it could be a really cool, really classy, emotional kind of thing. You can't just have him go in there and, like, if he's going to lose, he just loses and then kind of waves and walks off, you know, like Shawn Michaels did at WrestleMania 26. It can't be that. It can't just be that. So I'm as interested to see it, you know, what they do when the match is over as much as the match itself. Craze K's. So Solomonster is my top Spotify podcast. Thank you, brother, for making me look forward to a Monday throughout this chaotic year of 2025. Well, I'm glad I can be the guy who brings you all the good, bad, and ugly analysis of what happens on TV, even when you don't really want to watch what's on TV, or if you don't have time to watch. I'm here to watch for you. The last Saturday night's main event shows have been YouTube in Canada. Interesting. Well, wherever it is, as far as whatever platform it may be, I don't think there's going to be any severe time restrictions. I mean, there's always some limitations on how long they can go. I'm sure they're going to format the show in a way that will give Cena plenty of time. Plenty of time for the match and plenty of time to do whatever it is that they're going to be doing after. This is not going to be a Bill Goldberg thing where they cut him off in mid-speech. That was Bill Goldberg. They're not doing that to John Cena. They've had a year and a half to prepare for this. They're not cutting off John Cena. Do I think Vince McMahon shows up? I do. Not on TV. I think he'll be there. I don't think he'll be on TV. I don't want to see him on TV. He should not be on TV. Will he physically be there? I believe he will. Yes. All right. On that note, we had a little overtime ourselves here, like dynamite tonight. But it was good. It was good. We got two Be the Bookers. Got some good questions. Bring all that energy on Friday. We could do it all over again on Friday night and close out the week in a big way. I love it. Leopoldo. Getting one more five in here. I think Cena's match is going to be like Gunther against Punk. Gunther is going to be killing him, but somehow, some way, Cena is going to pull it out with heart and grit. I mean, that should be the story here. I mean, Cena's not going to go in there and dominate anybody at this point. And you can't well do a squash because nobody wants to see that, number one. And number two, you already did it in September with Brock. So if he's wrestling Gunther, which of course he is, Gunther should be mostly dominant in the match, but it has to be competitive, though. He, you know, Cena has to fight from underneath. You're going to get a gazillion attitude adjustments. You're going to get a gazillion chops. Like, you could picture the match in your head, but the emotion, knowing that it's Cena's last match, that is what will carry this match. The match itself may actually be very basic. I don't know how far out Cena's going to go with some of the moves that he does. Although this is it. This is his last chance if he wants to show us something fancy. But it doesn't have to be that. It could be a very basic match. The emotion of it and those near falls, that is what will carry that match. And I do believe that the right move to make would be to have Cena win. I think there's been just so much bullshit on this retirement tour. I think the right thing to do would be to give the fans the happy ending that they're going to be looking for. It might not be the right decision in the eyes of people as far as business is concerned. And I totally understand Gunther winning, but I just think for the fans, it would be the right move to just make them happy, let Cena go out with a win instead of going out on his back. That's how I feel. Will Rock show up? He might. Rock was on, what show was he on? I don't know. He was on some kind of, maybe ESPN or whatever, a couple months ago. They asked him, are you involved in the creative for John Cena's final match? And he made a comment like, yeah, you know, I got a little bit of involvement in that. They run shit by me. I chime in on that. I don't know what his level of involvement is at this point with this stuff, but he's had plenty of advance notice that this is going down on December 13th. If he's cleared his schedule, there's no reason he shouldn't be there. You know, he was one of Cena's marquee opponents. Made a lot of money on that wrestle, especially that first WrestleMania match they had at 28 in Miami. Undertaker should be there, Shawn Michaels. But, and again, this is pending their availability, but Rock, Batista, Randy Orton. Randy Orton's got to be there. Punk will be there, obviously. Seth Rollins said he's going to be there. Seth said he's going to be going to a Chicago Bears game and then circling back to DC so he could be there. Maybe not on camera, but you know, he'll be there at the show. JBL, right? He was the first person John Cena beat to win a world championship. I'm sure he'll probably be there. Who else? Kurt Angle. Kurt Angle has to be there. Kurt Angle has to be there. You're going to see all those guys there. Maybe not Bret Hart, though. I don't know if Bret Hart would be invited. Bret Hart may not like the punches that John Cena throws. And Bret Hart is not a big fan of Gunther. So I don't know that he would want to see Gunther in the main event. I'll see you guys on Friday. Until then, take care, guys.